Erev Tov. Now some of this is going to be repeated of what I said a week ago Shabbos, because they didn't hear it yet. So we're going to go through that and then go further. You have two things. You should have two things in front of you. You have these sheets from the Mishnayos, and then here is on one sheet you have the entire perek. We're dealing with the third perek of Pirkei Avos, and I want you to have the whole perek in front of you right here. Not only do you have the whole perek in front of you right here, you have each one of the Tanoim, 17 or 18 of them, underlined over here. What we are dealing with is on the second side, Mishnah Yud Zayin, Rabbi Akiva. There are four Mishnayos that are said by Rabbi Akiva. We already learned the Mishnah before, Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Hevekal Larosh, the Noach Lutishchodet, the Hevei Mekabel et Kol Ha'adam, the Simcha, the way in which you are to relate to other people, those above your station of life, those below your station of life, those who are your equals. And now we come to Rabbi Akiva. In a little while, we're going to just read through all the four Mishnayot of Rabbi Akiva, and then the next few weeks will be to discuss them in detail. But there is one idea that I began to express 2 weeks ago, Tuesday night, at our previous year, that I want to develop fully tonight, and that is, are the statements of Pirkei Avos nice, sweet aphorisms? Cute statements, you know, real nice stuff. Or is there something far deeper, far more profound, and far more powerful involved in each one of these statements? And I'm going to explain. Second question that we have to deal with is, it would seem, from a superficial look at history, that Rabbi Akiva was heavily involved in one of the greatest disasters in Jewish history. He was involved in the Bar Kokhba rebellion. The Bar Kokhba rebellion ended with such a resounding defeat of Bar Kokhba by the Roman legions. 580,000 Jews were killed outside of Beitar, which was the last stand of Bar Kokhba. And yet, it's very interesting, no one condemns Rabbi Akiva. And we don't find anybody saying that Rabbi Akiva, like, what did you do, Rabbi Akiva? What did you do to us? You got us into this terrible, terrible uprising against the Romans, a rebellion that, yes, did have some kind of success for about 2.5 years, possibly up to 3.5 years. The rebellion is supposed to have begun approximately the year 132, that is, Churban HaBayit, the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, was in the year 70. So 62 years later, comes the Bar Kokhba rebellion. He captures Yerushalayim, establishes a Jewish kingdom, Reishis Tzmichas Geulaseinu, the beginning of the flowering of our redemption, and they even strike Bar Kokhba coins, and then Rome gathers its forces from all over the world and crushes the Bar Kokhba rebellion. Why isn't Rabbi Akiva roundly and soundly condemned? Rabbi Akiva is the one who said, "Dein Malka Mashiach, this man is King Mashiach." On Ben Kuziva was his name. Ben Kuziva, Rabbi Akiva is the one who called him Bar Kokhba. Ah, this week's Sedra. Bilam says at the end of the Sedra, Dorach Kochav Me Yaakov, V'kom Shevet Mi Yisrael. A star shoots out of Yaakov. This Kochav Me Yaakov, that was what Rabbi Akiva said about Bar Kokhba. So I just want to give you a little bit of historic background, and the historic background is also going to be supported by what it says in the Gemara. Or maybe I should have said it the other way around. The Gemara is pretty clear, pretty clear. All we have to do is be able to read the Gemara properly, and we know exactly what was taking place at the time. And it certainly is borne out by Roman historians. By Roman historians. The historian that everybody who deals with this period in Jewish Roman history, everything begins with Dio Cassius. Dio Cassius. I'm going to read one paragraph from Dio Cassius. Roman history. Bar Kokhba uprising. He's writing about the 2nd and 3rd centuries. This is in the 2nd century. He's talking about Hadrian. Hadrian is the Roman emperor. Listen carefully. At Jerusalem, he founded a city in place of the one which had been razed to the ground, naming it Aelia Capitolina. Aelia was one of his names. And on the site of the temple of the god, he raised the new temple to Jupiter. Right? This brought on a war of no slight importance, nor of brief duration. That's an important sentence, nor of brief duration. You read enough of the Jewish and non-Jewish historians, they leave you with the impression that the whole business took a period of 2.5-3 years. It was a 10-year struggle between the Jews of Eretz Yisrael and Rome. 10 long years. That's a long battle. That's a long war. The 10 years war. For Jews to hold out against the certainly far superior forces, that was an accomplishment. This brought on a war of no slight importance nor of brief duration, for the Jews deemed it intolerable that foreign races should be settled in their city and foreign religious rites planted there. Hadrian's plan was that he was going to bring Goyim from elsewhere in the world and settle them in his new city, Aelia Capitolina. So long indeed as Hadrian was close by in Egypt and again in Syria, they remained quiet. He was headquartered at different times in Syria and in Egypt. So long as he was there, they remained, the Jews remained quiet, save in so far except as so far as they purposely made this is great, as they purposely made of poor quality such weapons as they were called upon to furnish. Hadrian had the Jewish factories make weapons for the Romans. Azolcha weapons, kapurov, those weapons, Jews made them of very inferior quality. That's another significant way to show your revulsion and your revolution against the enemy. So here the Roman says that they took them time till they found out that the arms that they had ordered from the Jews were of very poor quality. But when he in order that the Romans might thus have the use of them, not much use. But when he went further away, they openly revolted. To be sure, they did not dare try conclusions with the Romans in the open field. They didn't go out into the open field to wage war with Roman legions. Guerrilla warfare. Watch what they did. But they occupied the advantageous positions in the country and strengthened them with mines and walls. By the way, the word mines over here is mines as in coal mines, gold mines. Mines has another meaning today too, all right? They strengthened their fortresses. They made fortresses in the mountains, in the fields, in order that they might have places of refuge whenever they should be hard-pressed. And listen to this. If it sounds familiar, it sounds familiar. and might meet together unobserved underground. You know what they did? They built tunnels. And they built long tunnels that were able to take them from one fortress to another fortress completely unobserved by the Romans. Every few meters, they built an air hole for light and air to come in. Does it sound like something familiar to us? And they pierced these subterranean passages from above at intervals to let in air and light. At first, the Romans took no account of them. Soon, however, all Judea had been stirred up, and the Jews everywhere were showing signs of disturbance, were gathering together and giving evidence of great hostility to the Romans, partly by secret and partly by overt actions. Many outside nations, too, were joining them through eagerness for gain, and the whole earth, one might almost say, was being stirred up over the matter. This Dio Cassius is also the one who said, when Judea rebels, the Roman Empire quakes. Judea was the smallest province of the Roman Empire. But when Jews rose up against the Romans, it had a ripple effect across the entire Roman Empire. I mean, this is a Roman who is writing this. The whole earth, one might almost say, was being stirred up over the matter. Then indeed, what Hadrian did was he sent against them his best generals. First of these was Julius Severus, who was dispatched from Britain, where he was governor, and he was sent against the Jews. And Severus, the Caesar, General Severus, did not venture to attack his opponents in the open at any one point in view of their numbers and their desperation. But by intercepting small groups, he was also afraid of meeting Jewish forces in the open. And thanks to the number of his soldiers and his under officers, and by depriving them of food and shutting them up, he was able, rather slowly, to be sure, but with comparatively little danger, to crush, exhaust, and exterminate them. Very few of them, in fact, survived. 50 of their most important outposts, 985 of the most important villages were razed to the ground. The Gemara says, after the battle with Hadrian, after Bar Kokhba, Yehuda was completely desolate. Yehuda was chorev. And the number of those that perished by famine, disease, and fire was past finding out, but 580,000 men were killed in raids and in battles. Thus, nearly the whole of Judea was made desolate, a result of which the people had been forewarned before the war. And then, what also happened was that many Romans died in the war against the Jews. And therefore, this is brought in all the history books, Hadrian, in writing to the Senate to report that the revolt was over, did not employ the opening phrase commonly affected by emperors. Emperors would send from out in the field after a great victory, they would begin by saying, "If you and your children are in health, it is well. I and the legions are in health." Didn't say that, because he and the legions were not in health. It was an extremely costly war against the Jews. Now, you should have gotten the idea that we're not talking here about the French Revolution or the American Revolution. Taxation without representation is tyranny. Give me liberty or give me death. Is that what we're talking about? Do you understand? A goy who has already razed the city of Jerusalem to the ground wants to bring in tens, if not hundreds of thousands of goyim. He has changed the name of the city. The Har HaBayit he's going to turn into a temple of Jupiter. Let me ask you, how do you think the Jew will say it? In the street felt? this was a spontaneous uprising. Jews were absolutely revolted by this. It was not a matter that Jews sat down and they decided, you know, I think we have to rebel against the Romans. That's not what happened at all. It was instinctive. It happened naturally. It came from the people. We're talking about a struggle that was so natural for the Jewish people. What people in the world would ever tolerate anything of this sort? Harabayit, where we bow down before the Rebbeinu was become a temple of the Jupiter's old Eibishter Rabbi. We're going to see also, I'm going to read a few Gemaras to you, where the Gemara says that Hadrian prohibited Bris Milah. He prohibited Shmirah Shabbos. They closed the mikvahs in Eretz Yisrael, so no Jewish woman can go to the mikvah. Tell me, how long do you think Jews will remain silent under such persecution? Can they last a week? 2 weeks? How long? There were soldiers watching that people shouldn't learn Torah. Man, how long? How long? Do you know what we're talking about? We are talking about such cruelty and such brutality and such absolute hatred to everything Jewish. It's not possible for Jews to survive under such circumstances. What happened in Yehuda, in Judea, was the natural result of the situation that was created by Rome. It wasn't that Rabbi Akiva called together Chachmei Yisrael and they decided, let's go, we're going to make a rebellion. The rebellion was there. It happened. It was widespread. It covered all of Klal Yisrael. Jews from all over the world became involved in this struggle. We're talking about a people that had to stand up. It was impossible to live under the circumstances that Rome had created. And there are a number of Gemaras where the Gemara makes it very clear. I'll just read a number of Gemaras and then we'll take another closer look at this parak. There's a Gemara in Bava Basra at the end of Cheskas HaBatim. Rabbi Yishmael, the Mishnah before, Rabbi Yishmael says the following. You don't have any of this. This is my private stock. Rabbi Yishmael says the following. The end of Cheskas HaBatim, the third parak in Bava Basra. Tanya, we learned in a Braisa. Omer Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha. Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha said, Miyom Shecharat Beis HaMikdash. From the day that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Dinu Shenigzar Al Atzmeinu, by right we should decree upon ourselves, Shelo Lechol Basar, not to eat meat, Velo Lishtos Yayin, and not to drink wine, Ela Ein Gozer Gzeil Al Tzibu, we don't make a Gzeila, a decree upon the community, Elen Kein Roa Tzibu Yechol Lamaba, unless the majority of the people can live with that kind of a Gzeila. But by right, what we should do is prohibit the eating of meat and the drinking of wine because we are in a terrible, terrible state of affairs. Umiyon Sheposhta Malchus HaRishor, and from the day that the evil kingdom has spread out, Shegozeret Olenu Gzeirat Ra'ot V'Kashot, that they decree upon us evil and difficult decrees, Umvatelas Mimenu Torah Umitzvahs, it makes it impossible for us to study Torah before mitzvahs. Ve'ein Manachat Otanu Likones L'Shavua HaBen, and doesn't let us go into Shavua HaBen. What happens at the end of a Shavua of a Ben? Bris Mila. Surah Mishwa says, Now that they have done all of this, Dinu, you know what we should do? Dinu Shenigzar Al Atzmeinu, we should decree upon ourselves, Lo Lisa Isha, not to marry, Ulaholid Bonim, not to have children, V'Nintzazaru Shel Avraham Avinu, and the seed of Avraham Avinu will disappear on their own. Ela HaNachlan Yisrael, leave the Jewish people be. Mutav shiyu shogin vayim. We see them better that they should sin unintentionally than sin against such a decree. Do you understand what Rabbi Shmuel? This is the same Rabbi Shmuel in this Mishnah, by the way, or maybe more than by the way. Rabbi Shmuel is one of the 10 martyrs who was put to death by Rome. Rabbi Shmuel is describing the feeling of Klal Yisrael at the time. It was terrible. It was impossible. They don't let us study Torah before mitzvahs. It's impossible. We can't live like this. So there was no decision that was taken, we're going to rebel against Rome. It was a widespread uprising that came from the man in the street. All that happened at a later stage of this uprising, there were so many bands, gangs, guerrilla groups, cells all over Yehuda. And the leader of one of these cells seemed to be a man of great power and great might. And Rabbi Akiva saw this as a sign min hashamayim that maybe there we will be zeichet to a Yeshua v'atzlocha, and that was Bar Kochva. Rabbi Akiva didn't plan the rebellion. Rabbi Akiva didn't initiate the rebellion. There was no necessity for him to do that, or for Chachmei Yisrael to do it. Which means, therefore, of course, there will not be any kind of complaints or condemnation of Rabbi Akiva. There was no other choice. We had to fight. Whichever way we were lost, it didn't make any difference. We had to fight. There's another Mechilta in Parshas Yisrael. This will really give you a picture of what it was like in this period of time. It's on the Aseres HaDibros. The Aseres HaDibros says, you know, that I reward, Ohavai, those who love me, and Shomrei Mitzvotai, those who keep my mitzvahs. So, Gemara says the following, Rabbi Natan, the Mechilta, Rabbi Natan says, Lo Ohavai, Shomrei Mitzvotai, who are those who love me, and the ones who keep my mitzvahs? Elu Yisrael. This is Yisrael, Sheyoshvim Be'eretz Yisrael. Jews that live in Eretz Yisrael, v'notnim nafsham al mitzvot, and they give their lives, literally, for the mitzvahs. You ask a man, Malcha Yotzei Lihoreg, why are you being taken out to be executed? And his response is, Al Shemalti Es Bini, because I circumcised my son. Malcha Yotzei Lisodef, why are you being taken out to be burned at the stake? Response, Al shekorosi b'Torah, because I read Torah. Malachayotze litzalev, why are they taking you out to be crucified? Al shachalti matzah, I ate matzah. Malachah loke, why are you being whipped? Al shenotalti et halulav, because I took a lulav. This is a description of Hadrian and the decrees of Hadrian in Eretz Yisrael. That's the period of time we're talking about. They made it impossible for Jews to live. Impossible. Jews had to fight. That's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. One more Gemara. Gemara, and I could quote many, many more, but here's a Gemara in Me'ilah, where the Gemara says the following. Tamachas Gozra Hamalchus Gezerah, once the Malchus decreed Shalom Yishvu Ut HaShabbos, the Jews shouldn't keep Shabbos, V'Shalom Yomulu Et Bnei'em, that they should not circumcise their children, V'Sheyivalu Et HaNidot, that they would have to live with women that are nida, because they closed all of the mikvos. So the Gemara goes on to explain how ultimately the Gzeira ended 10, 12 years later, and one of those who brought about the end of the Gzeira was Rav Shimon ben Yochai. But it came to an end because Hadrian died, and then even following Hadrian, the one who followed Hadrian was Antoninus Pius, also a Gzeira Rosha. Then comes Marcus Aurelius. Marcus Aurelius already is Antoninus, the one who became a close friend of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, but during the period of preceding Hadrian, during Hadrian, and immediately following him, they're talking about a period 10 years at least, maybe even 15 years, it was impossible for Jews to live in Eretz Yisrael. So number one, we have to know already the background. Now you know a little bit about what Rabbi Yishmael, who said the Mishnah before, he's one of the Asara Arugi Malchus. That Rabbi Akiva is one of the Asara Arugi Malchus. In this chapter of Pirkei Avos, nearly all of the Tanoim lived during the Roman occupation of Eretz Yisrael. The only one who might not have was Akavya ben Mahalalel, the first one. Let's take a quick look from the beginning of the parak. Akavya ben Mahalalel may have, in other words, Rome was already in Eretz Yisrael. Rome already was in Eretz Yisrael. But Rome had not yet become brutal Rome. That came later. But of course, you know, whenever you come to Rome, the Ramban at the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach says that we brought the Churban upon ourselves. We invited the Romans into Eretz Yisrael. We brought the Romans into Eretz Yisrael because there was a civil war going on between the two children of Alexander Yanai, Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, and one of them, I think it was Hyrcanus, called Rome in, and then the other one also got Roman legions on his side. We push it, invited the enemy into our own home. It's unbelievable. Huh? I'll tell you. If today they would be giving rifles like the kind of weapons that Jews made for Rome, Volt Gewehr Gut. But they've given rifles that have killed Jews afterwards. It's unbelievable. Gosh, we don't learn from history. We don't learn from history. It's unbelievable. Look at the third Mishnah. Rabbi Chanina ben Tragin Omer, you see the third mission over there? Rabbi Chanina ben Tragin Omer, Shnayim Sheyoshim Vein Beinayim Divrei Torah Hadezem Moshev Leitzim, two people who sit and there is no Torah between them, that's a Moshev Leitzim. A bunch of jokers, goonish. You know, one can learn this Mishnah. Oh, what a nice, you know, what a nice frumavart. Oh, what a mussy, you know, two people should be sitting and learning Torah. Reb Chanina ben Tragin was burned at the stake because he taught Torah. Reb Chanina ben Tragin is saying something for which he gave his life. The story of Reb Chanina ben Tragin, what do you tell? The story of Reb Chanina ben Tragin. They wrapped him in a Sefer Torah. And the famous story of the Roman officer, they had put wet wool on him so that he should suffer, and the Roman officer who is burning him at the stake asks, if I take off the wet wool, the damp wool, will you assure me a place in the world to come? And Reb Chanina ben Tragin, from the fire, you understand, he's burning to death, said yes. So he took off the wet wool, and then at the last moment he jumped into the fire with Reb Chanina ben Tragin. Where it says, Yotza Baskol, a Baskol came out and said, Reb Chanina ben Tragin, Vakazdor, the Roman officer, Amuzumonim l'chayelam abor. And then there's the famous statement that his Talmidim asked him, Rebbe ma toroe, what do you see? The great five words, Gvilin nisrofin, the parchment is burning, but the letters of Torah are flying through the air. What he's really saying is the eternity of Torah and the eternity of the Jewish people. They can destroy the bodies, but they cannot destroy the spirit. They can burn me and they can burn the Sefer Torah, but they cannot burn the Isis of Torah. So when Rav Chanina ben Tradin is making this statement, it's not a just nice musa shmuz for yeshiva bachum, you know, two of you sitting together, you shouldn't be that narishkeit. He's telling Klal Yisrael at a time that it's awesome to learn Torah. Don't you, under any circumstances, stop learning Torah. Two people are sitting together, you have to sit and learn Torah. And you know what he's telling them? What? Why are you going out to be put to death? Al shekorasi v'Torah. He's telling them, do something for which if you are going to be caught and apprehended, you're going to be burned at the stake or crucified. So this is not just a nice aphorism of the fathers. These are powerful statements of defiance of Rome. Down toward the bottom of the page, you have Rav Chanina ben Chachinai. Rav Chanina ben Chachinai was also one of the Asara Harugei Malchus. I hope we'll get back to this Mishnah sometime, but he says a person who's up at night, one who goes on the road alone and thinks of nonsense, Hareze Mitchayev Benavsho, he's playing with his life. It could have meant on the practical level, he might have meant we need young men who are strong, so you can fight Rome. The roads are dangerous. You can't go at night on the road alone. You have to be constantly aware that danger is lurking out there. Chanina ben Chachanai is making an extremely important and powerful statement. I can go through all of the Mishnahs here. All of them. And each one is making a very, very significant statement. So therefore, we have now accomplished two things. Number one, there is no condemnation of Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva is not the architect of a rebellion. It wasn't a rebellion. It was an instinctive, instant uprising of Jews all across Eretz Israel. When I say all across Eretz Israel, I mean Yehuda, because the fact is that there were not any great Jewish communities in the Galil. By the way, it's after the Bar Kokhba rebellion is crushed that the remnants move northward to Tzipori, to Tveria, to Shvar'am, to the Golan, all of the great communities. That's where Rabbi Yehuda Nasi writes the Mishnah. Talmud Yerushalmi is written in Tveria. I mean, like there's, Gush Chalav, yes. All of those cities, towns, villages, all across the Galil. Galil HaTachton and then Galil HaElyon, and I say even in the Golan. That all came after the Bar Kokhba rebellion. So therefore you have to understand that the only thing that remains of Rabbi Akiva is Rabbi Akiva is the great hero of the Jewish people. He was an important figure during the course of this uprising against Rome. More than that, the Gemara says the following. Rabbi Akiva, of course, taught Torah under the most difficult circumstances. He was put to death by the Romans because he taught Torah. The Gemara says the following. Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Stam Mas Nisan, a Mishnah that does not have the name of a rabbi who said that halacha in the Mishnah. Stam Mishnah is always Rabbi Meir. Stam Tosefta, the Tosefta, one of the significant Tanaitic writings, is Rabbi Nechemiah. The Sifra is Rabbi Yehuda. The Sifri is Rabbi Shimon. And then the Gemara says, the Kulo Aliba de Rabbi Akiva. All of them were the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, and they expressed Rabbi Akiva's opinion. That means the totality of Torah, Shebal Peh, the oral law, was Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, whose father, you understand, was a ger. His BT, you understand. There's Baal Tshuva. He's not the only one. Shmaya and Avtalion were also children of Gerim. I believe it was Rav Chanina ben Tradion's daughter. His daughter was Bruria, who married Rabbi Meir. Huh? Ben Gidim, yes. And the Gemara lists that some of them came from Sisera, others came from Nebuchadnezzar. The Rebbein Shalom has, I always say, he has a great sense of humor. These Rishoyim and Rishoyim must probably continue to turn over in their graves, knowing that their offspring, their seed, has become Gedolei Yisrael. I read an article in the news section of the Haaretz about 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, about Baron Edmund de Rothschild owned some highly intellectual magazine. Was the magazine of Sartre. And some communist, you understand, has been the editor, an icon of the left, the French left, and he fired him. You understand? He just fired the guy. I mean, people weren't reading the magazine anymore. In its heyday, it was the great. If you wanted to be a respected radical, you had to read this magazine. In middle of the article, it says. The guy who was Sartre's right-hand man, who established this magazine with him, our communist was communist. I don't remember what his pen name was, but the article in Arabic says that after the death of Sartre, about 2-3 years later, he went to Israel. He was Jewish, became a Baal Tshuva. Took back his Jewish name, Benny Levy, and you understand, from this greiser communist intellectual. So I'm sitting here in somebody's house, being Menachem Mavel, and the article, it said that he died 2 years ago. So the fellow, some fellow sitting there said, sure, he lived in Bayit Vegan. Everybody knew him in Bayit Vegan. No, from left field all over. Who was it? Who was this? The greiser communist that died at come out 100 years old? Yitzchak Ben Aaron? Is that it? Yeah. Huh? Yeah. An unrepentant communist till the last moment of his Arichus Yomin. You understand? Most probably still made a mishabera for Stalin every morning. The son of the world. So there was an item in the paper after he died that he has an enikel who lives in Gush Etzion. Talmud Chacham sits and learns Torah. Can you understand? Tartotsky also has a grandson in. It's unbelievable. The Rebbeinu, what a sense of humor he has. I'm always waiting for. I'm waiting for Shalom at Aloni's kids and for Sarid. Almost there's no hope. I doubt it. Almost there's no hope. That's bad news. Huh? What? Who? Which Barak? The justice. What does he have? Does he have grandchildren? I wanted to find out if Olmert has grandchildren. So I went to Google. None of them are married, right? Yes. Huh? Oh, I'm old-fashioned, honey. I'm very old-fashioned. Anyway, all that I did was I typed in by Google Olmert grandchildren. So I get they. They keep quoting what he said in Congress, that our grandchildren will live in peace. That's the only thing they wrote about grandchildren and Omer. Anyway. Huh? Holofine. All right. That's basically what I wanted to accomplish. Two things. two things, and we're going to start learning a few Mishnayos. I wanted to accomplish two things. Number one, don't for a moment think that the statements in Pirkei Avos are nice, sweet, goody-goody statements. Every one of them has great power, and people's lives were given for them. What are you talking about? Take a look over there. Where was it? Rabbi Shimon. On that first page, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shlosha, Sha'achu al Shulchan Echad, three who ate at a table below Omer, all of Divrei Torah, Ki Luachu, Yisifche Mason. If three people are sitting at a... It's Mishnah number four, Dalit. Three people are sitting at a table and they didn't say Divrei Torah. It's as though they ate from the sacrifices of the dead. Zivchei Mason is it means meat that comes from a sacrifice to an idol. Shenema brings a pasuk from Yeshayahu. What a statement this is! Ki kol shulchanos molel ki tzoa b'limakom. All of their tables are full of vomit, filth. B'lim makom, there's no place on the table for anything else. You know what he's saying? You know what he's saying here? It's true, by the way. The Romans had right next to their table a potty so that they can throw up in order to begin eating again. This description in Yeshayahu is a precise description of a Roman orgy of eating. Rav Shimon says we're going to win the battle against Rome because we turn our table into our eating into an act of kedusha, and by them it's zivchei mezim. So it's not just a nice thing, like a nice balabasta on a Friday night. Says, oh, you have to give it back Torah. You have a Dvar Torah, you know, and like it's a sweet, nice thing. A Dvar Torah by the table is basically an act of revulsion against what eating was by the Romans and what eating is bichlal by Goyim. It takes eating and raises it to a level of sanctity. Reb Shimon, you know who Reb Shimon is? Reb Shimon ben Yochai. Reb Shimon ben Yochai was condemned to death by the Romans. And he fled. Mar tells the whole story. And he ended up with his son in a cave for 13 years. The famous story of Reb Shimon ben Yochai. And miraculously a stream of water and a buxa tree grew there. And that's what sustained them for 13 years. He lived in the hills for 13 years. Because there was a death sentence against him. And then when the period of Hadrian and Antoninus Pius, those two periods are over, Rav Shimon ben Yochai is able to come back, return to his family, and return to civilization, and become the Rav Shimon ben Yochai, our Rav Shimon ben Yochai. And where is he buried ultimately? He's buried in Mechon. Everything moves to the Galil. All of Eretz Yisrael moves to the Galil. Talmud Yerushalmi was written in Tveria. Tveria. I imagine it must have been Tveria during the summer. During the winter. I don't know how you can write in Tveria during the summer. I just did this past Shabbos. Wow. It's very hot in Tveria. That's why Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who wrote the Mishnah, had two homes. His winter home was in Tveria, and his summer home was in Tzipori, up on the mountaintop. If you've ever been in Tzipori, at the ruins of ancient Tzipori, first of all, you can understand how he wrote the Mishnah over there. There's such a beautiful breeze any time during the winter. And of course, it's right at the top. Summer. A beautiful breeze, and then you can see from Tzipori, you see down all over. You see all over. It's a major. What a beautiful spot! That's one of my favorite. Don't come. It's one of my favorite places to when I want to run away from civilization. I go to Tzipori. I'll tell you. I'm afraid I'll tell you. Find out. Hoshaya's next to, but Mitch's cabins are in Tzipori.
Susie and Mitch. Beautiful. All right. Beautiful, not stamped Zimmerin. Mamish a cabin. And you get breakfast delivered every morning. Okay. So there we have. So we have already here Rab Chanina ben Trajan. We have Rab Shimon ben Yechoi. We have Rab Chanina ben Chachinai. All of these were people who suffered because of Rome. All of the rest of them lived during the period of Rome. Okay. With his son, yes. Huh? That's right, his son was with him, Eliezer.
Did he also get a soldier?
No, no. Reb Shimon and, as I say, they hid out in the mountains until the period, the terrible Roman persecution came to an end. And then he ultimately he emerged. All right. Let's. What I want to do now in preparation for next week's shiur is, I want to see. I just want to read through the text. There are four Mishnayos that are Rebbe Akiva four. And let's just read through. I'll try and control myself, not talking about each sentence, just so we get a picture of these four Mishnayot. Rebbe Akiva Omer. Rebbe Akiva says, "Schok v'kalus rosh margilin esadam le'erva," laughter and light-headedness, accustom a person to immorality. That's quite a statement. Schok and kalus rosh. Remember, Rabbi Yishmael in the Mishnah before had said, "Hevei kal l'rosh." So Rabbi Akiva is tempering the statement of Rabbi Yishmael by saying, you can be besimcha, but you have to watch that simcha doesn't pass that dangerous line. There's a certain point at which simcha can become just a little bit too much simcha, and then it becomes kalus rosh. Kalus rosh is a lightheadedness. A lightheadedness sort of... It could be drinking. It could be joking. A lot of things. And in a sense, what it means is that barriers begin to fall. People will say things that they would not have said under other circumstances. They might even consider doing things that they would not have done under any other circumstances. Rabbi Akiva in this Mishnah is going to talk about walls. Siyogim are walls. There are two, a wall serves two purposes. Keeps out the people on the other side of the wall, and keeps those of us who are inside the wall contained within that wall. Here we're talking, of course, about the walls of morality, walls of Torah. It's a different kind of wall and fence. Asu siog la Torah, make a fence to the law. We have a beautiful term that describes it. I see, I'm not going to read all these Mishnahs. There's a beautiful term. The beautiful term comes from Shir HaShirim. Suga va Shoshanim. Suga, a siog of Shoshanim, a hedge of roses. Beautiful Rashi there that describes what's a hedge of roses. Chosen and Kala, the Chasana. Chasana is over. They come home. And Kala turns to the Chosen and she says, Tipas dam Ra'isi, I've seen spot of blood. Nobody's there. They can do whatever they want. And you know what happens? Hu Podesh, he turns aside. She turns aside. What's stopping them from doing what they want to do? What they got married to do? What stops them? A siyog, a hedge of roses. There's a Rabbeinu Shalom in that room, and they feel the Rabbeinu Shalom. Rashi gives a second example. Man is walking along a road on a hot day, and there's a beautiful fruit tree.
branches are bending over onto the road, man stretches out his hand to take a fruit, and no. Somebody tells him, no, can't. No, can't do that. Can't do that. He withdraws his hand. What's the voice? The voice is the Rebbeinu Shalom, lo tignov, don't steal. What is it that stops him? A wall of hedges. A hedge of roses. I tell you, to explain this Mishnah, I said this morning the following. Robert Frost, famous poem of Robert Frost, good fences make good neighbors. You know what Rabbi Akiva is saying in this Mishnah? Good fences make good people. We need fences. We need hedges of roses. We need that which is going to, on the one hand, protect us from the influences of an outside world that are absolutely in opposition to everything that is holy to us. And then we need a wall that's going to stop us from going beyond the point that we should go. So the first one that he's talking about is the idea of schok v'kalos chosh. Now, schok, you have to understand, schok means laughter. You know, we have a Zayda who was named for laughter. Yitzchok. What's so bad about laughter? Shlomo HaMelech in Shir HaShirim says Eis Lifkot is a time to cry, and Eis Lifkot is a time to laugh. Who is the big laugher in Shas? Who's the laugher? Rabbi Akiva. That famous Gemara at the end of the Masechet Makkos. Rabbi Akiva is walking with Rabbi Daphne, Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Risman, that one. And they're at Haratzofim, they see a fox going into the Kodesh HaKodashim. They begin to cry. He begins to laugh. They ask him, why are you laughing? He asks them, why are you crying? So they say, what are you talking about? Why are we crying? The place where the Shekhinah is, the Kohen Gadol, the only one that went in one day a year into the Kodesh HaKodashim, and now foxes are walking through it, and we shouldn't cry? So he says, that's why I'm laughing. Why am I laughing? Because foxes going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim is a precise and exact fulfillment of the prophecy of the Navi. Shu'olim Hilchoba. Foxes are going to go through the Kodesh HaKadoshim. When I see that prophecy of destruction and ruin has been fulfilled so precisely, now I am absolutely certain that the prophecy of Zechariah, Od Yeshu Zekenim Uzekenos, that the elderly will sit in Yerushalayim leaning on their canes, Meirov Yamim, because of long life, and children playing in the streets, I'm certain that that's going to be fulfilled. So they told him, Akiva Nichamtanu, Akiva Nichamtanu, Akiva, you have consoled us, you have consoled us. So he's the laughing man. And he says, Schok v'talus rosh, margilin esodom le'erva, accustom a person to immorality. So obviously the pshat that you have to learn is that he means schok is okay if it's without talus rosh. If schok is accompanied by kalus rosh, you know what happens to that schok? That schok can become a dangerous, dangerous mixture that can begin to break down barriers. People start coming out of closets or going into closets and doing kol davar asa. Margilin es adam le'erva. That's the way it is. That's the way it is. Huh? No. So he may have used that, but that's not. Sorry, Joe, I can't buy it. Kalos Rosh is Kalos Rosh. One can have a big fat kippah and conduct himself with Kalos Rosh. Kalos Rosh. No, means a lightheadedness. It's a sense of. you move to a certain point where things are not so serious anymore. Life is serious business. The moment you begin to feel that things are not serious, you open up the possibility of doing kol tovah rasa. Huh?
Lack of inhibition.
Very, very well said. Kalus Rosh removes the barriers of inhibition. Good. Good. Masoret Siyag LaTorah. He's going to talk... Huh? Oh, wait, did I admit that I...
Before that,
yes. By the way, one of the Mefarshim says, Midvar Sheker Tirchok. You should stay as far away as you can from Sheker, falsehood. Sheker stands for Schok Kalus Rosh. Nice? Nice. All right. Hey. So there's so much to say over here. Anyway, we'll just at least finish this Mishnah here. My big ideas of reading all of the Mishnahs of Rabbi Akiva. Masoret Siyag LaTorah. Masoret is a fence that protects Torah. The word Masoret is going to have two meanings. One meaning is the Masorah. There's a Masorah that we have that tells us exactly how each word in Torah is spelled. With a vav, without a vav. A big beis, a small aleph, a big dalet, a big resh, vav of gachon, middle letter of Torah, big. All of these are part of a Masorah that have protected the text of Torah for 3,500 years. Millions of Sifrei Torah have been written, and the differences between Sifrei Torah are so minute. It was an absolutely amazing way, because a sofer sat down to write a Sefer Torah. It was done the Eimo B'Yira. And therefore the Masorah is that which protected the Torah. Masorah has another meaning, and that's the meaning that it has in the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Masorah, the transmission of Torah. Moshe Kibetol Misinai U'Masorah LeYoshua. And who becomes the bearer of the ultimate Masorah is Rabbi Akiva. The whole Torah Sheba'al Peh is going to stand on Rabbi Akiva. Masro Tziyag LaOsha, giving Maisa, is a wall that protects one's wealth. We'll talk about that. Nidod in making vows, Siyag LaPrishus, is a fence that assists a person in separating himself from that which he should be separated from. And then Siyag LaChachma, Shtika, you want Chachma? There's one fence that saves you, and that is Shtika, remaining silent. To be continued in Yitz Hashem Gesundheit next week. Okay. Huh? Yes, I know. Where do you think that's exactly where he got it from?
Okay. Yeah, remember to do that thing like that taking.
Huh?
Remember that lecture you got with yes.
I told you mine. I'm going to have to get it from the office. That's what I told you, because mine simply didn't come.
Thank you very much.
For what?
For the share.
I can only give you a finger right now. I've got to get this. I don't know why.